WBRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello, hello, and indeed ahoy, hoy. Welcome to episode 585 of BRB UK. I'm Dan, I'm here this week, and I'm one of your hosts, being slightly distracted by Coleman's love of a soundboard. You love a soundboard, don't you, Coleman?
I love a soundboard. Hi!
No, that was actually you saying
working.
It. No. So Coleman now refers to speaking as his live soundboard, is how I think he deals with it. There's Tim. Tim's over there as well. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
I hear your cat is more popular than you on the live stream.
I mean, that's natural. Cats and the internet go together like cats and
the internet.
Gray dogs.
Cats and gravy. No, dude.
Cats
no.
And gravy.
No.
No one gravy on cats.
Well, no, my cat does like gravy. In fact, we are fully felined up, I do believe. Well, my cat is just had dinner and is in a coma in my room. Coleman drop kicked his cat. Literally, we saw it.
Don't say
Frodo.
Things like that.
Frodo, get out of here!
No, this is not fun or exciting.
Wow! Someone call the RSPCA. Coleman's being mean to Frodo the cat again. Poor Frodo.
Run, not my cat too. Not being mean, just fed him. In fact,
ah, what did you feed him?
Yeah, cat depends
food,
what
probably.
You fed him.
I was hoping for some kind of description, but you know, cat
like
food
swing,
it is.
Gave him cat
miscellaneous mechanically recovered meat from the finest cat food houses in Eastern Europe. I'm
as
sure.
Someone that's recently got a cat, it's one thing that I knew as a child and forgot because I didn't have a cat for years. And how does cat food manufacturers make chicken smell so bad? How do they manage that? I don't know why that's a thing.
Chicken buttholes.
Well, that is the preferred cut of meat for cat food is the chicken ring piece is what they like to do.
One ring to rule them all.
One ring. Or I don't really have a ring piece. I suppose they have like a claw. Actually, chickens don't really have a ring piece. They have a cloaca.
Oh, we're back to cloacas, are we?
We're back to cloacas again.
We are back to cloacas.
Yeah.
Back to reality.
Yeah. Anyway. Welcome to the hot video gaming chat you were hoping for that is now descended into talks of chicken cloacas, which is vaguely adjacent to good old Professor Mordin, I suppose, from Mass Effect 2. So he likes
great.
The word cloaca, and I agree with him. It is a great word. Anyway, we have done some video game stuff this week. And oh, God damn it, Tim, you've got all of the games to talk about again.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Jesus.
Yes.
Oh.
What's the most important game you have to talk about, Tim?
Well, all three of them are review copies. And
what's the most important game you have to talk about, Tim?
Which is your favourite child of those three?
We're going to make sure that you don't talk for 45 minutes straight.
Dungeon Drafters is the one that I need to give the most attention this week. The other two I've had to squeeze in just
very
because VRB has delayed in recording. But yeah, Dungeon Drafters is... Yeah, definitely sounded like my type of game, and I really like the general gameplay loop. It's a kind of roguelite dungeon crawler, or dungeon hopper, you might say, because you're hopping from square to square. It's got a kind of false isometric, like it's almost from above, but kind of slightly tilted.
Looks nothing like that is not isometric. Link to the Past.
If you let me describe it, Dan, the levels...
It's not really isometric! I have issues with your use of the word. It is top-down. Isometric is at an angle.
No,
that is not
down,
at an
no,
angle.
No, no, no. Right,
it is not isometric.
Top-down would be entirely square face-on. It is not entirely top-down. It is a tilted to a slightly false isometric perspective. Because the level is a slightly tilted kind of square, but it's kind of broken up into a grid, whereas the characters and all the kind of furniture within the level is all basically isometric. But yeah.
Furniture?
Well, yeah. Yes. Bits of literal bits of furniture in some cases, like thrones and chairs
what
and other objects
about?
And tables. But yeah, it's as I said, I really like the general gameplay loop. It's kind of card-based combat where you get like 3 action points per turn, you are like either going with those cards or moving like from one square to another, or doing a base attack, and all one of those will take up one of your action points, basically. And it's also got this kind of system where you have to be attuned to different kind of different style of things. So basically, I'm kind of attuned to fire and earth, basically, so I can use fire and earth cards. But the more attunement you have to one degree, the more cards that gives you availability to. So to start with, I had like 2 fire and 2 earth as my base character type thing. But I added another fire crystal so that I could pick more fire cards. But instead of doing that, you could add like a health crystal that gives you more health. And so there's a kind of, yeah, balance of exactly what you're going with there and kind of what kind of play style you want to go with and what cards it gives you access to.
So can I just do first of all, well, actually, I've got 2 questions. One, I would just like to do an indie game bingo card check where we have got turn-based check.
Yep, yep.
We have deck building check. Yep. And we have roguelike check.
Cutesy characters.
Yeah.
Cutesy characters
roguelite,
check.
But yeah.
And we have 16-bit-esque graphics, you know, retro fun style. I call bingo. Bingo! Yep.
Bingo is what we have. Ticks all the boxes. We're good.
But also, I've got an important question for you, Cole, man.
Yep.
What elements are you attuned to? I'm attuned to potato and cheese. What is your attunement?
I'm attuned to fluffy socks and a roaring fireplace.
Ooh.
Ooh. Classy little devil.
I go with bacon and cats.
You sick monster.
What is wrong with you, Tim? First of all, you've completely stuffed up the definition of isometric, which I am not going to forgive you for.
Ever.
And then I said it's a false isometric.
Through the day.
Anyway. Good God.
But yeah,
I have a question for you, yes. Tim. Is what we're seeing on screen, for those of you who are looking, viewing this on stream, on the live stream or viewing it on YouTube, I ask you, sir, is that an axonometric projection where the 3-coordinate axes appear equally foreshortened and the angle between any two of them is 120 degrees? Is the answer to that yes? Because if no, that is not isometric.
No, and yes,
you, sir, are a charlatan.
Okay. But it's also not top down. You described it as top down, and it is not that.
Yeah, it's kind of top down.
No.
Definitely not isometric, though.
It's more top down than it is isometric. But yes,
there
that's
we go.
Why I didn't
so you're correcting yourself.
Solely
good,
isometric.
Lovely.
But anyway,
fantastic. Good.
But yeah, enough arguing and quibbling over the perspective angle.
It's not arguing when I'm right.
But yeah, it's the gameplay loop is you pick a dungeon, you go to that dungeon, and you can get like partway through a dungeon and kind of quit and get out with all your resources, or you can kind of press on, get to the end of that dungeon and then get out that stage, or like as that's the kind of the first initial dungeon is kind of almost a training area and it's quite easy and it says everything is safe. Then you can advance to other areas where they kind of advance through different floors. One of them is broken up into I think 4 or maybe 5 floors that are safe. And then it goes into risky, whereas the other areas are generally broken up into one floor that is safe, one floor that is risky, and then it progresses till it gets deadlier and deadlier as you go to one level is actually deadly kind of thing. And you can jump ahead. You don't have to like choose which one you go to. You can go to any floor, and most of them have that initial floor at least that's safe, and so you can kind of go on there. And each different area has a slightly different mechanic of what's going on and a slight variation to the enemy types that you're facing. So there's a kind of slime monster that kind of appears throughout the different things, but they'll have a slightly different thing to them when you go into. So there's a level called the Glacial Library, which is a library filled with ice, not surprisingly. But the kind of mechanic in there
I have
is
a question.
Yes.
Is this a library to catalogue the different kinds of ice, or is it a library made out of ice?
It's a library that has been iced up somewhat. But that means that...
I have a question.
Right.
If there was a library of glass, would it be a glacial library?
Possibly.
Glacial library.
No.
Glacial.
No.
Glacial.
Maybe.
Glacial.
Get on with it.
Was that? But, hang on. That was all just a setup so you could use the soundboard, clearly.
Yes.
Nope.
Yeah, that was clearly a setup so you could use the soundboard.
No, if it was a setup, I would have done that.
But the mechanic to the Glacial Library is the fact that you can tread on like the blocks that are
broken glass,
and that will slide you from one end to the other of the ice. So you can actually traverse quite a bit of the level, but you can't stop. So you'll slide from one end of the level to another if it's all iced up, all that across. So you've got to kind of take that into account when you're traversing the level and trying to approach enemies from a different angle. And some enemies, like especially later on, have to be approached from a different level because they might have a shield that you can't attack them through from one side. So you have to approach them from a particular side to attack. And then you get a variety of different attacks that will do like area of effect attacks around you, or attack in a straight line and attack all enemies in a straight line possibly. And yeah, there's a like difference to all the different kind of powers you're picking. So like the kind of gameplay loop is you'll go through a dungeon, I pick up some packs of cards as you go. And then when you get back to the kind of central hub area, which you do by, if you die and go back there, then you lose all the loot that you've kind of attained in that run. But if you get back there any other way, which you can do at the end of a level or partway through a level, then you can unlock those packs, and that unlocks more cards that you then you can add to your deck. But there's various different things you need to take into account of, as to how you compose your deck together as well, the number of cards, what you're attuned to, and all that type of stuff as well.
Did you miss it, Dick?
The actual gameplay loop and everything is really good. I actually checked up on some of the reviews on this on PC, because my one caveat is that I've encountered a big technical problem with the game, unfortunately, which has hampered my enjoyment of the game.
Were you trying to run a PC game on your Switch?
No, well, it was previously released on PC, sure. So I wanted to see if it had been a problem on PC. I'm very hopeful it's something they can patch out entirely. But this may be because I jumped ahead a level and then accidentally went down to the risky floor before I was really ready to do so. Died shortly afterwards. But ever since I did that, I've had this weird slowdown thing where there's a massive delay between my inputs.
Hold your brain.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Between my inputs mode has been enabled
the
for
actions
you again,
actually
Tim.
Taking place, which means that I can literally like stand in a level, press right, and then wait, and then wait.
Don't know about Ecom, but that accurately reflects the experience of having a conversation with Tim.
Really close.
But then that will disappear. I've tried to like quit out and do a few things, and like go back to the main hub level and do a few things to get rid of it, and it just randomly seems to go away for a bit and then come back again. And I'm really hopeful that's something I can patch out, because it really has hampered my enjoyment of the game, which otherwise I've really been enjoying the general gameplay loop and the game. It's a good turn-based strategy game. It seems really fun. I hope that's something they can patch out on Switch. It is also available on, as I said, PC. It's been out on for a while, but I think it's more recently come to PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One.
All of
it
the
is,
things.
I think $22.99 on the Switch, on the heavier end of the price range, but it's like around £21 to £23. And there is a lot
there's
of
currently
games
a 20.
Get... Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, there's currently a 20% discount on the eShop. I've got to note as well, and on the Steam store, I think.
Okay, and at that sort of price, you get a lot of game for your money. It does, as I said, it comes with that caveat that technical problem needs to be removed before I can really recommend it. But otherwise, as you say, it does kind of tick the indie game bingo card, but it does everything reasonably well. It's put together quite well, and I quite enjoy it. So I hope they fix that problem, because then it becomes a fairly easy recommendation, basically.
So you can, if you want to check it out on Steam, it is compatible with your Massive Dick. It's verified.
It'd be good on
Massive
well.
Dick, in fact. And if you just want to check it out, there is a demo available on PC as well.
Okay.
Is available to purchase for £20.99.
Mm. Nice.
Nice.
Sounds like a recommend.
This does look quite fun, I have to say.
Yeah, it's good.
Now, can we break up, because you've got three games, Tim. We break up the Tim Fest with...
I think you should drive a wedge right into it. Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Dan.
Yes.
Dan.
Dan. Yes.
Oh, no.
Dan.
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 Dan's a fantastic man.
Are we done?
You happy
are we done?
One?
Are we done?
There we go.
I know that has been lurking on the list. It's, ladies and gents, we have an agenda. An agenda, allegedly, that tries to give some structure to what we're doing. And I've seen that lurking at the bottom of Coleman's to-do list for a while. So, Coleman, we have been... Coleman.
Yes.
Come on, we have been playing Pacific Drive, haven't we? And I believe that's what your background is. So Pacific Drive, I've been playing it on PC. You've been playing it on PC as
correct,
well. Because
and why
I
is
hear,
that, Dan?
Because the apparently the PS5 version performs like utter arse. Is what
that's
I've
a shame.
Heard.
Because yes. I nearly bought that. Version,
and also,
yeah. Yes.
So across the board, this get well across the board. It's only available on PC and PS5, but the game is $24.99. If you go to CD Keys, it's
£16.
That's what I did. So we got our CD Keys copies. Maybe they came from a Russian mafia. Maybe not. Who knows?
No, CD Keys are generally legit-ish.
They're usually fine, I think. They're not G2A.
Anyway,
I'm playing this on desktop. I've not played as much as you just yet, Dan, because I kind of ran out of time. I tried this on my Steam Deck today because it is Steam Deck verified.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't probably work out well for you.
No.
Nope.
I need to do I've looked up, there's a lot of guides on setting it up, but it's not like, so we were talking about when you were off the show, Dan, the remake of Brothers of Tale of Two Sons, and that, like a lot of PC games, it's got the really cool feature of going, hey, just click this button, we'll work out your hardware, see what you can do and put the best settings for you. Pacific Drive does not have that.
No. If you click that, it goes, could you not?
It doesn't have a deck mode either. So a lot of Steam Deck games just have a deck mode in graphic settings, but there's nothing like that. So
a deck mode, but I think we'll agree that that not having that object that option is, it's a deck mode.
Damn!
Yeah, hi.
There is some fiddling to do. Anyway, the game itself.
Yes, the game itself. So this is it's a survival game, but
this is an indie isometric top-down card battler with cutesy characters, roguelite. Pixelated graphics.
Lovely. Great.
And a dog.
All of those things. So it's a survival game in first person, but what makes this different is that basically your only companion is your car. So the setup of the game is that in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, there was some kind of government-sponsored shenanigans in the middle of chuffing nowhere somewhere in America. That's called the Olympic Exclusion Zone. They did weird science. Weird science made weird stuff happen. And when weird
they
stuff
made a
happened,
woman.
People started going a bit peculiar. So they evacuated
Wingo
the whole area, but the weird stuff continues. And because weird stuff continues, you kind of got sucked into an alternate dimension, which is where you are at the moment. And there's a couple of other people who also got sucked into that alternate dimension, but did used to work there. So they're trying to, you know, get you out, I think, or at least try and keep you alive, at least as far as I've got. So the basic setup is you are trying ultimately to help your friends, but also escape. And you've got to do that by going through excursions into the weird, spooky wilderness where you've got to, you know, collect stuff, do things, navigate weird challenges. As kind of one of the main gameplay loops is essentially going out there, attempting to collect resources, trying not to die, because my God, everything wants to kill you in this game.
Because it's a survival game.
Yes, I know. Although I go through every day surviving without stuff proactively trying to kill me, is what the argument I would make. But there we go. You're essentially trying to collect materials to upgrade your car, is what it comes down to. Hopefully with the aim of going further and further into the exclusion zone. Presumably for some kind of end game, I've succeeded in saving the universe kind of thing, or some other miscellaneous plot twist. But it's all a bit of a mystery about discovering what actually happened in this zone, looking at how kind of unusual and spooky everything is, trying to understand the stuff that's going on around you. I purposefully went into this game completely blind as well, so I'm kind of doing a lot of discovering the hard way here. But I haven't really got... I would say I'm only probably about 4.5 hours in.
Okay.
I would say the average kind of session you can play is certainly so far... I would say it's not short. It's not a dip into it for 10 minutes and nip out again. I would say probably each gameplay session is a good 45 minutes to an hour if for each loop, I would say.
Kind of, yeah, they do kind of warn you about that as well as you start to sort of go, hey, when you're playing, there's no manual save when you start a drive, a journey. And if you leave, then it was going to go back to the last save point, which is the start of the journey, basically. Mm-hmm. But you can manual save every time you go back to your garage, which is like your save zone to do all your car upgrades and things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so once you start out, you better be determined to carry on because you've got to get back to the garage before you can do anything. What I like about this game,
to their credit, though, there are options you can set in the game setup where you can say, right, if I quit out in the middle of a mission, you can decide how harsh the penalty should be. It's like lose everything or lose random items. Or lose nothing if you are a big Jesse Wussbag, I do believe is the technical term.
I shall be changing that setting.
Yeah. You big Jesse Wussbag.
Well, if I can get this running on the Steam Deck when I'm out and about, that's a good thing because one, it means I can play out and about, but two, I'd assume sticking in rest mode is going to be a godsend, and also. Yeah, if I do need to quit out, then I probably would need that setting to not just penalize me every time because I tend to play the Steam Deck like on the tube or something, so I need like 10 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
What I really kind of like about this game is it does that thing because this is a car game. It's a survival game most, but it's mostly around cars, and it does that thing that the majority of racing games like to do. Is that game trope where they make you like the powerful version and then for some reason they take all the abilities away and then you start from the beginning. In car games, they go, hey, here's a supercar that you're driving in. You got your Bugatti and you're driving around in that. Isn't that great? Cool.
Your Bugatti.
Your Bugatti.
The Bugatti, and, right.
And then they downgrade you to like a Skoda Octavia or something like that. And that kind of does that with this because before you end up in this, in the upside down, they stick you in. Basically,
that's a fair comment, actually.
Yeah, it's basically the upside down. Stranger Things at you in. And then once you end up in the alternative world, then the car that you pick up is this rusted station wagon, and then that's your car throughout the game that you've got to upgrade. So I like that.
It's a cool, deliberately like, little play drives on the trope. Badly. Like, is that something that gets annoying, or does that feel in keeping with the game and like? A challenge more than an annoyance.
I can imagine. Well, it's going to be a challenge more than an annoyance, but I can imagine it getting more annoying as the game progresses. Once you start getting into the more difficult levels and you're fighting off enemies and stuff, and hey, you have to get in your car, and oh no, the wheel's fallen off because the wheel does fall off your car. Which is fun.
I have to say, certainly in the early game, the car is an absolute piece of crap. It really is. It is like
I like this, it. It's got character.
Yeah, I know. It feels like your first car. Actually, I'm the only one on the show who can drive. It feels like your first car, which is meant to be an absolute heap. It's meant to be that, and you form quite a weird attachment with the car in this game. I mean, like I said, I'm not massively far through, but already like the little tweaks I've made to it, it's like, oh, that's my car, and you kind of feel quite proud of it, and you love it. Despite the fact it is an absolute steaming pile of crap.
Yeah, it's like the banger racing equivalent to what's the really in-depth space flight game that you can play in VR?
Elite Dangerous.
Dangerous. That's exactly what I was thinking of. It's the crappy car version of Elite Dangerous, where you can really get into your ship customization and you can pour that's because you pour money into it. But you're like, that's my ship. I take a lot of pride in my ship. That's my beat-up station wagon. And if I am going to drive around the apocalyptic wastelands, I want it to be a station wagon because I like the idea of being Clark Griswold at the end of the time. And when bad guys come up to me, I can be like, roll them up. Drive away.
Well, I felt very proud when I crafted a boot lid for it. I was like, look at me, I've made a boot for my car. I am a functional human being. Congratulations.
It's the old school Top Gear meme where they start a fire on one of the adventure episodes and he's like, I have created fire. Arrgh! It's got that kind of feeling when you start crafting parts for your car.
Yeah. No, it's a great little game. I think, you know, by design they've made it quite a rite of passage, the whole trying to understand exactly what it is you're up to, because it kind of explains some stuff. It's like, hey, look, the upgrade bench is where you do upgrades, but apart from that you're on your own.
What?
Then there's the kind of, once you go past the first level or two, you kind of get to upgrade stations, the wrong way to put it, I suppose, kind of the research station where you can unlock additional plans for stuff. Doesn't really do a great job of explaining, oh, by the way, all that energy you collected is actually the currency that's needed to unlock all of these plans, by the way. In order to kind of, that's kind of the loop, I suppose, is in order to get out of the upside down, you need to collect kind of these big energy balls, which open up rifts in reality and allow you to teleport back to your to the garage. And you can then, those get cashed in when you return, allowing you to unlock upgrades to make your station wagon more awesome. It's so a great game. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. I'm looking forward to playing more of this. I might put it aside and play some other things and then come back to it. But no, I think I'm going to play this quite a lot, actually. Very good. PC, PlayStation 5, out now, $24.99. Mm-hmm. I think there's a physical version of the game coming to PS5 pretty soon as well.
Yeah.
And as Tim said off mic before the show started, this is quite suited to VR, I've noticed, because it has the thing of, so if you're playing with controller, you can just touch buttons and that'll control your lights and your.
That sounded pervy a little bit. You can touch buttons.
I'll touch your buttons. If you're on a mouse and a keyboard, then you can use the mouse to move around and physically like hit the things that you need to like turn the ignition and all that kind of stuff.
I can imagine. I give you a pro tip though.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a pro tip when you talk about controllers, because you're then I'll let you finish what you're going to say. If you are playing on PC and you have a DualShock controller, make sure you use a USB cable, because then you get all the adaptive trigger goodness even on PC.
Oh, okay.
It won't do that via Bluetooth, but it will do it via a USB cable.
I didn't even think of that. Okay.
You're welcome.
I was just going to say the kind of movement in the car itself, it does feel like a little bit No Man's Sky, so I guess that could adapt to VR quite well. I know you can hack for VR if you're using that mod tool thing that came out a little while for UE5 games. Mm. But if they wanted to do an official patch, I can imagine that translates well to PS5, because someone's got to bring out something on PS5 VR.
But harsh, but very fair.
They may have internally stopped developing any games for PSVR too.
Yeah. one of the things I actually find quite endearing about it is the fact that you have to manually interact with everything in the car. You need to look down, turn the ignition on, put it into drive, because Americans don't know how to drive stick, it turns out. I kind of like the fact that you've got to be quite tactile with the car. Again, I think it really kind of helps the sense of immersion in this particular game. So anyway, that's my view. I quite like this game. What has wheels?
Tim?
Stick does not have wheels. That's why it's hard to drive.
No, but there is a stick in it. Never mind.
Which VR games do you need to VR?
Both of them. So I'll do both of them fairly quickly, just because I'm a bit behind with both of the reviews. But I will go into a full review when we get another VRB up and ready to go. But we've been delayed slightly because Kevin is poorly at the moment. So
he's unwell.
I'm a bit behind with my review, so I just want to speak about both of these quickly. They're both recommendations, spoilers, but one is Rainbow Reactor Fusion. That comes with a slight caveat, but the basic gameplay is a match 3 game, and it's got a kind of physicality to it. So the basic premise is that you are making things disappear by throwing an orb at a grid of hexagons. And if you line up, you match three or more of them, they disappear from the grid, and you've got to get a certain amount of matches before you can move progress on one level. And the more you do without any misses, the higher your multiplier gets, basically. But there's an extra kind of complication to that, because you can actually have like a mix of colors. So you get to the point where you're having to mix two of the orbs together to make a different color to then be able to throw that at the board and kind of make them disappear. It's one of those things where when it works and it's working really well, and you're getting kind of, you know, clutch shots that, you know, make a big group of them disappear by hitting exactly the right space, you're like, well, why has no one thought of making a match three game in VR before? And then on the reverse side of that,
I've never
when you're like missing the kind of the area that you're going for, and it's kind of overshooting, and you're sort of wiping out of the level because you've missed too many times, and it really didn't go anywhere near where you threw it, you're like, this is a stupid idea, why did anyone make this? But generally it goes with the former rather than the latter, and more often than not it feels like you made a mistake rather than it kind of didn't read what you were doing right.
I can almost guarantee, Tim, it's always you making a
mistake. It's always me. Yeah, it's always
you. It is always you making a mistake.
But I really like the base gameplay.
Purchasing more than one VR headset.
Yeah, I really like the base gameplay.
But he's got two eyes. He thought that's how it works.
That's how it works, go on. But yeah, it's the base gameplay is really good. I really like the match three game. I kind of wish there was a bit more of it in the game. Like, the actual major portion of the game is a kind of story mode type thing where you're going from level to level, but to unlock those different levels, you also need to do other things in the environment. So you'll have to go and turn a few kind of valves on to release the kind of colors that you need to get to the next level. But then you can also, from doing other things in the environment, you can earn some money that you can then get some unlocks that make each level a bit easier. To start with, you've got like the ball catchers, so that when they run down the two channels either side of you, they'll fall into the ball catchers, so you won't have to physically catch them yourself like instantly. So it gives you a kind of bit more time to make your shots.
I have a question. And,
yes?
Do you have to cup them?
Yes.
good.
Worth waiting for.
And cough.
You're the doctor.
You can also get like a mixing thing where it's another thing where you can hold another ball and you can kind of add two things together, put it to one side so that you've got one kind of ready to go.
And 9 months later, a stork will deliver a wonderful baby for you. Right, yep.
But to start with, those are all available to you, but then on subsequent levels, you need to pay to unlock them to make that level easier. You can just do them without them. It just makes it a bit harder to do. But sometimes that can be quite tricky, especially when it gets into multiple colors and you having all six colors available to you and kind of having to go with that. Some of the things that you do in the general environment feels a bit like busy work, and that's where the kind of slight lack of budget shows a little bit. Like, for instance, one of the things you're doing is kind of cleaning color stains off the floor with a kind of mop-like or brush-like device. And you kind of mop those up.
A mop-like substance.
And if you have mop-like device more than substance, but like, but it's kind of half mop, half brush.
I like calling mops a substance. That's good.
But yeah.
It's quite funny.
It's a mistake, Dan. I don't know if you've ever made one before, but anyway.
Never.
No, I just said it because it's funny.
Yes, okay. But then, like, there's other things in the environment, like destroying boxes. And once you've, like, mopped up all the color or destroyed all the boxes, then you get in that particular area, then you get, like, some money unlocked that you can then unlock some of the other things with. But yeah, as I said, it feels a little bit like busy work, and it doesn't necessarily always look that good or work that well. There's ones where you're kind of unscrewing screws, and that can be a bit... It doesn't quite respond one-to-one to your movements, basically. But that aside, that's easy to forget. Like, it does kind of pad out the game, and you end up getting a bit more game. The one thing I think is a bit weird is the arcade mode is just the like each level of the game with the story and those other busy work things that you're doing stripped out. And it's, I think it would have been better if you could just had a straight arcade mode, which was one continuous mode rather than having to get a certain amount of unlocks. It would have been better to do an arcade mode that was a bit different to the other bits in the game. But those slight misgivings are easy to forgive when the game is priced at £12 on PSVR 2. And I believe it's even lower than that. I think it's $7.99 on MetaQuest.
Wow.
It's not the graphically the most impressive game. It does look shiny and nice-ish in PSVR 2, so it probably looks a little bit
like
nicer.
My head.
Yes, like Coleman's head. And round as well.
Shiny.
But yeah, I think it could be just as fun on MetaQuest as it is on PSVR 2. It's a good little game and interesting. It's slight different take on the classic match 3 kind of mechanics. So yeah, it's a general recommend for that price. It makes it a bit easier. And the other game I've been playing this week is a game called Little Cities Bigger. It's a city builder that is particularly attuned to VR. So we'd already had Cities VR, which was the kind of City Skyline remade for VR. And I've had that on my wish list for ages, and I've just resisted buying it because I really like city builders. But it didn't sound like that one was particularly well attuned for VR. And I'm pleased to report that Little Cities Bigger is very well attuned to VR. It's the UI and everything and the way it works is just really well done. There's kind of bubbles that you kind of poke with your fingers to kind of go down to different levels and then pick the object that you're going for.
I'm getting a PS Vita UI flashback as you say that.
Oh, really? Yes, it is a little bit like that.
The bubbles.
Bubbles. And yeah, like it is kind of simplified, so you don't have to do like all of the like utilitarian side of things. So if you lay a road, for instance, it's got all the kind of electricity within there. And once you connect all buildings and your kind of electricity power supply type utility buildings, once they're all connected to a road, the electricity just flows through the road. So as long as they're connected to the road, they've got electricity.
I'm sure that's fairly dangerous. If you are planning your own city, please don't make all the electricity go up the road. It's a bad idea.
Probably a bad
basically
idea.
A tram line.
But it does help simplify...
You and your fancy roads, Coleman.
But it does help simplifying things to in comparison to City Skyline, where you've got to lay like all your sewage pipes and all your electricity pipe and do that all separately. And it does kind of just speed up the whole process, make things easier. And you're also just kind of like zoning things. So you've got like residential, industrial or commercial, and you just zone an area with it. And then it kind of builds all the buildings
Aztec.
There. And then you add different things to it. It's also got some Fancy really
castle.
Nice little thing. At first, it seems almost overly simplistic, but as you kind of get deeper into the game, you notice that it's got a bit more about it and stuff like that. Like you got like wind turbines that you set up for power initially, but then you have to worry about like the volume of wind where it is on the island that you're kind of setting things up as to where you place that. Then you've got, as it gets a bit more complicated, you get like geothermal power things that you have to put over vents in the kind of volcano island that I'm on now, basically. But then that volcano will explode and start like doing things in your town. But unlike SimCity, the kind of original kind of build with that.
Never heard of it.
Where it had those sort of mechanics and stuff like that, SimCity 2000 back in the day, where a volcano went off and you'd have to then set about rebuilding things. You don't have to worry. As long as you've got like a fire station that's covering that area of your island, they'll deal with all the fires. Things will be rebuilt if they need to or repaired, and that all happens automatically. You don't have to worry about it. But there is a kind of some synergy between buildings, and you get like style points for doing things in a particular way. And some buildings you have to kind of find out what those combinations are as you go. So the most basic one, and I won't spoil all of them, but the most basic one is you get extra style points for building a donut shop next to a police station and little things
Yay!
Like that. So, you know, it's kind of little jokes and little things like that. But there's some really nice kind of things that they've presumably added for the PSVR 2 version, because it was previously on MetaQuest. But like there's little things where there's a little aeroplanes that kind of fly around in the sky. And if they go past your head, it gets
they
a
do
little
have a habit
of headset.
Doing that, in all fairness.
Well, yeah, no, but if it goes past your head in close proximity, you get a little bit of headset rumble going on, which is quite cute. And yeah, there's various islands with various different conditions and a variety of different buildings and stuff you can unlock that's particular to those islands. So there is a good reason to go back and kind of replay in different environments. And yeah, like the whole like menu system and stuff, aside from the odd time when you might like poke and it might go like two levels down rather than the one level you were going for sort of thing. But the general UI works really well and functions well and has been well designed for VR. And it's just a really enjoyable game to play. It's one of those things where you stick the headset on and then you're like, well, I'll just play for half an hour. And then like two and a half hours later, you're like, oh, I've been playing this a bit too long.
I've gone blind.
I need to quit. But yeah, it's one of those games where
I mean, we have been telling you that about VR for a long time.
I played until my Sense controllers ran out of battery kind of thing. So, you know, like it's easy to just lose a bit of time to. But yeah, really enjoyable, really well designed. Yeah, really liked it. So that's a strong recommendation.
Jolly good.
Strong recommendation.
Oh, I should have said with all of the games I talked about this week that I was given review codes for all of them. So, hey ho. It's also $19.99. Little Cities Bigger is on PSVR2 that I've been playing it on, and yeah, I generally recommend it because it's really good fun and quite a bit of game for your money.
I have something bigger for you.
Oh
my! There we go. Little throwback to early noughties dance music there. Anyway,
Dan.
Yep. Anywho, should we do some news? Have we finally run out of stuff that Tim has played? I think we have, which is good.
Yes, but we've spoken a lot about our review games this week, so we're going to have to eat through the news quite quickly.
Nom.
Let's get some of your technical expertise, Dan, because there's been...
Strap in.
Just to kind of give you the skinny on what's going on, because this has been circulating everywhere this week.
Right.
There were some leaked specs from the upcoming PlayStation 5 Pro, which it may be called the PlayStation 5 Pro. We don't know yet. This first emerged on a YouTube channel called Moore's Law is Dead. But then that was then picked up by Insider Gaming that claimed it was real, and that's since gone on to, I believe, IGN, Eurogamer. Who are the guys that do the tech teardowns? I always forget their name.
Digital Foundry.
Digital Foundry. Like, a bunch of different people have kind of corroborated this as true. So it looks like this might be legitimate. So we know the specs for the PlayStation 5 Pro, but that doesn't necessarily mean, because people have done builds of PCs based on the specs, but there is a lot of software and internal gubbins going on that could...
Is that a technical
term?
A
lot.
Yes.
It is a technical term.
Excellent.
Because I saw one of the big things going around this week is, hey, the upcoming Grand Theft Auto 6 is not going to play well on the PlayStation 5 Pro because of the tech specs. So the kind of things like AI upscaling and stuff may have something to do with it being better than advertised. So what are we looking at, Dan?
So this is a bit of a funny one in terms of, I think what makes this different, the PS5 Pro compared to the PS4 Pro, is that the PS4 Pro, I kind of got the feeling, was trying to jump on the 4K TV bandwagon because they just launched at that time. And it was like, hey, guys, look, we could do 4K.
And HDR.
Whereas
that was their big selling point.
Whereas now, both of those are a bit more, lots of people have got tellies with that. So this is really much more of a feature upgrade. And I kind of wonder if what they're really going after here is trying to get away from having the performance or the quality modes. And I think that is what they might be chasing with the PS5 Pro. Because I think we've all... kind of gone, oh, well, that all that ray tracing stuff is well fancy, but I'd much rather actually enjoy my game when it's 60 frames a second, nice and responsive, And, you know, you probably, all of us are probably going, oh yeah, look at that. That quality mode looks lovely, but no thanks. So in terms of the upgrades, there are some, frankly, minimal upgrades. I mean, or relatively minimal upgrades, essentially. So the CPU, the central processing unit, is pretty much exactly the same, although it can run, just doing my sums, about 10% faster if you wanted it to. But I think this is probably because in the 3 or 4 years since the release of the original PS5, the manufacturing of the processor is basically more efficient, meaning that they can push higher clock speeds without necessarily it having a deleterious effect on the thermal properties of the CPU. So that is a minor upgrade here, but I think the big one comes from when you have a look at the amount of what they call compute units for the GPU. So that's how many things can execute stuff at the same time. And that goes from 36 to 60 compute units. And the way in which kind of the communications between those compute units happen, is my understanding, has been upgraded to going from AMD's RDNA 2 to RDNA 3, although that is to be confirmed. But it's highly likely that they're leveraging the technology that's now in desktop GPUs in the PS5 Pro.
Yes, that's all well and good, Dan. But how many teraflops are we getting?
That's
the real question.
Well, I'm going to melt your mind, Coleman, because I'm going to tell you that the GPU clock speed has decreased, but you get 3 times as many teraflops.
What?
You get 33.5 teraflops. That's a lot of floppies right there, wanging about in the night, enjoying themselves, Doing graphic-y things. The memory for
these teraflops are really spoiling us.
I know. I arranged them in an artful pyramid for you as well, Carmen. In terms of the total amount of memory, it's about the same, although the rate at which it can throw data around again has increased. It seems that they've slimmed down the kind of amount of memory that system processors are taking. There's about another gigabyte of memory that's going to be available for games. But to me, that sounds like more of a software operating system fix. So I wouldn't be surprised if the standard PlayStation 5 has that uplift as well.
Okay.
So there we go. Those are the numbers in terms of what I would expect the graphical fidelity to be. It's going to be more shinies at a higher frame rate, essentially what it comes down to. Again, I don't think it's going to be the huge leap up in terms of being able to drive a 4K display if you could have afforded one at the time with the requisite cable to actually push HDR at 4K. But I think this is going to be really more about making the quality mode less of a hit on the gameplay that you would enjoy. That would be my guess.
But Dan, let me throw a buzzword at you for a second.
Please do.
Mm-hmm. AI.
Yes. Oh.
Yes.
Yes. What about AI?
So you may know there's some AI gubbins going on for us twice.
There are
gubbins. AI magic going on in technology these days for upscaling your graphical capabilities and the PlayStation.
Indeed.
They're no stranger to this because they're going to come up with their own version, which is probably a bit full-heartedly called PSSR, PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution Upscaling. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I think that's going to be a variant of the FSR tech that AMD already have.
Yes, I think so.
Which isn't quite as good as the frankly ridiculous magic that NVIDIA managed to do with their GeForce series of CPUs. DLSS, which is the NVIDIA version of the Pisser, let's call it, is...
what a pizza.
What? I just did.
Can we not call it that?
Well, I think you said it was PSSR, didn't you?
Back in the PSSR.
No. The Pisser attack, which makes you... I can say it West Country. That somehow makes it more friendly.
It sounds like something an NPC in Fable would say. But, Pisser, what's one of those then?
So with the pisser, I believe that's going to, it will be probably very similar to the existing tech.
We're getting closer and closer.
Perform like. But yeah, I think it's a very, very unsurprising upgrade. I don't know whether or not Microsoft are going to follow suit. I very much doubt they will.
Mm. Well, they are, because the court documents already showed that there's a Xbox mid refresh coming on the way as well. So
I don't. Well, I mean, I don't. You know, I'd be surprised if they're as aggressive with the specs. I kind of get the feeling Microsoft just want to get out of this console generation and push.
They probably want the world's most powerful console.
They probably do, but it's not going to be the worst.
I would think with them falling short of their predictions for how many consoles they'd sell this year, where they had to revise it down from 25 to 21 million, and with
that's Nintendo, a bit of a pisser, wasn't it?
No, and yeah, a bit of a pisser. And with Nintendo now,
you're not even trying to hide that you're saying it.
Yeah, by not bringing the Switch 2 out this year. That means that the coast is clear for them to sell another console this Christmas, and possibly without anyone else really kind of picking on their chips and making that more difficult.
Comms okay. Like, God damn it!
There's the one. Also, the other bits added to this at the end that we missed as well. There's looks like we're going to get a terabyte of storage space out of the box, which most people have upgraded their hard drives because the SSD anyway. And much like the refresh for the vanilla PlayStation 5, the detachable disc tray will be a thing going forward as well. Looks like. Good. All DDT. Rumors point to we should be seeing a release of this for Christmas, way ahead of next year's release of Grand Theft Auto 6, which
yes.
Everyone seems to think won't play very well on a PS5.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if how hard Sony are going to be going about saying, hey, look, seriously, just upgrade your damn console. I think it is going to be, especially seeing some of the stuff that's coming. I mean, there's been a lot of tech demos coming out recently using Unreal Engine 5, which frankly looks just stupidly amazing. Yeah. And I think really to get that kind of visual fidelity, a console upgrade is almost going to be required.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw the trailer I sent you, but that they had the
1943
whole,
yep. Great.
Yeah. UE5 presentation. That they had a whole detailed thing beyond that as well, where they showed things off and they kind of showed off what was going on in engine, and they kind of had a deep dive on the kind of detail in the environments and stuff as well. That looks like it's gonna be really good. Yeah, like I don't think we've seen the best of what the Unreal 5 engine can do for gaming, and I think that might be a reason why Sony don't have any big games or don't have any first party games coming up this year, aside from cancelling all the live service stuff, which they bet the farm on. Like, I think maybe other people going over and porting stuff over to UE5, and sort of that probably led to a few delays here and there as well, I would have thought as well.
The Captain Marvel Black Panther game, is that EA? Am I
Captain Marvel,
that rightly?
Black Panther.
Sorry.
It's the Amy Hennig.
Amy
one,
Hennig
the,
is.
Yes. Cool. And she was presenting
stage
as well. But yeah, I think that's EA, if I believe correctly. But yeah, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to EA doing to Marvel what they did to Star Wars. And that's when the game comes out a couple of months later, it's unplayable because their launcher doesn't want to agree with anything. Bought that stupid TIE Fighter flight game I've forgotten the name of because it was a pound something on the Steam. Doesn't load! Can't
Doesn't
get
load.
Into it.
Well, at least
it's
£1.20. At least it only cost you a quid.
Yeah, £1.20 for that mistake. Cheers, EA.
I've made far more expensive mistakes, so count yourself lucky, you young scallywag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's called Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order on the PlayStation 5.
Wow.
Anyway.
Right.
Very quickly, last one's going to point quickly to Denuvo, because everyone loves Denuvo. And would you believe it, over at, I think it was at GDC this week, the parent company for Denuvo, Adrito, they've announced their they've announced their new watermark technology. And the whole idea of this is, if you stream, if you capture, if you are playing a game on your PC and you want to, well, or because Denuvo is on consoles as well now, If you want to be grabbing a screenshot or a video clip or something and leak it out there, then the publishers can track it back to the original source, which is something that has existed in films for a long time. I believe we call it digital ink. So the idea is if you have a screener for something and someone leaks it out or takes a photo, there is a hidden code in the color of the film that you can then track back to which studio leaked it. And the idea is if you've got, say, like a beta game or you've got, you know, something that's in production that you don't want the world to see, which is happening quite a lot lately. We just spoke about Grand Theft Auto 6 and we've seen all the leaks for that. This could be something to stop that now, but it is once again more invasive technology.
Woo! Coming to you from my favorite kind of technology.
Oh.
So that's going to be a thing going forward. The other thing as well, quite funny, not funny, I guess. There was the Apex Legends esports final going on last week, and it's had to be halted. And the reason being is
people
have been hacking the game. Now, this happens. This happens quite a lot in the world of esports. People hack their games. They pretend they aren't hacking. They get away with it. Then they get caught out because live streaming usually.
Naughty
scams. What's happened this time is as the live streaming is going on, people are hacking the pro players' accounts to make it look like they're cheating. So, which, to be fair, you're watching the pro players. I mean, it's funny, but it's a shambles at the same time. So there's been some emergency updates thrown out by EA. But you see these pro players. The one I saw was a guy playing, and then all of a sudden he could see through walls. He was like, help, someone's making me cheat. Help.
Yeah.
So at least they're being honest about it and didn't go, woo, I got an advantage over this. But yeah, the two big ones spotted are the invisible, well, not invisible walls, but you can see players through the walls, and the aimbot as well. So there's some shenanigans going on in the world of Apex Legends esports, which is slightly amusing. All right, that's all the news we've got time for this week.
It is. We are running longer than a long thing. Please put it in.
You were trying to think of something wrong, weren't you?
Yeah,
like finish
that analogy
drive
off in any way that you care. I don't mind. So we probably ought to start wrapping up. And it's my weekly reminder for you to go to tpublic.com/stores/brb and buy things with my face on it. That's right. Do you want Teenage Dan's face on your face? Well, now is the time where you can put my face on your face or on your chest, or maybe even buy some fetching pants with my face on them, or just a face mask or a baby grow. You can
buy a face mask and fashion it into a pair of pants.
That's right. You too can buy a face mask, fashion it into a pair of budgie smugglers and wear it proudly about a town centre of your choosing. I can guarantee the police will come and pick you up and take you back home within minutes. That is the value I can add
using
by
face
having
masks as budgie smugglers. Just so you know.
I do.
But anyway, so yes. go and...
If we go for another pandemic, they make it mandatory to wear masks again. Yeah. I've got my mask on. What are you talking about?
I'm packing it.
Eating my dust.
That doctor said it on that podcast I listened to. It totally cares. I'm technically wearing a face mask. All right? Jesus.
Dr. Dan.
Anyway, tpublic.com/stores/brb. Go there. Things are my face. You know,
I don't want to see
sense.
People nose poking through that thing either, but hey.
Jesus, Tim, stop talking about budgie smugglers, you freak. Tuesday, tell me about Tuesday, you sick sicko.
Tabletop Tuesday, anyone that doesn't know, each and every Tuesday, we do an event called Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Stoke Newington.
I've got a big nose, but come on.
Yeah, this week is a real doozy because we have a huge prize to give away this week. It is a game called Kingmaker.
How big is it? I want to hear you say that word like that again.
Huge.
There we go. Yeah. Beautiful.
Massive, massive, big, big prize this week. It's a game called Kingmaker. It was originally, I kind of think, around in the 70s, and then it had a recent crowdfunding campaign that was quite successful, and it brought out a new version where there's like the old classic rules and kind of more modern streamlined rules, and a solo variant in there as well. But it is a big old box and a very valuable prize. It's kind of unsuitable for Tabletop Tuesday because the games run from like 2 to 6 hours. So it's highly unsuitable for Tabletop Tuesday, but we took it because it was too big a prize to turn down. And it is a, by all accounts, it is a really good game as well. So it should make for a really good prize this week. If you want to come along and win a copy just by playing it on the evening, you can check out more details on the top left-hand corner of bigredbarrel.com, or you can join the over 2,100 members of our Meetup group by searching for Tabletop Tuesday on meetup.com. Or you can just come along and join us on Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Stoke, Newington.
Whoa, do all of those that things. That place is in London.
Correct.
Nothing gets past me. I'm too quick. I'll catch it. If you've enjoyed the show, you're a weird one, but we love you all the same. Thank you very much. Did you know you can go to bigredbarrel.com, and that's where we have a website. Over there, we've also got links to our cool social media platforms. We've got a Discord, which you can find over there, and you can find it in the show notes. We've also got social media accounts so where you can follow us. We've got Big Red Barrel on Facebook, on Twitter. No, it's called X, and on Threads. And Instagram, but we don't put anything on there. And also, we have YouTube, which you might be watching this video out.
Just Tim modeling my face mask.
Just his budgie smugglers, because he's Mr. November, as everyone remembers. We're available on YouTube. It's Big Red Barrel TV. You can go there. You can watch the live streams. We're going to put these out publicly soon, once we've ironed out the kinks, is the idea. We will put out the published version and carry on. But yes, subscribe to us on YouTube and comment on the video and give us a like, and go to our Discord and you can ask us questions, which we've got one. It's a very quick one. It's from Ed. It says, when will you finally all give up the pretense and kiss already? 585 episodes of this anime and there's not been so much as a peck on the cheek.
I'm fairly sure there wasn't. I didn't. Has there been fan? There's some kind of fanfic.
There was fan fiction.
Yeah.
We acted out. It wasn't great.
No.
Whoever wrote that, sorry. It wasn't great.
We kind of want to keep the will they, won't they romance of Dan and Coleman going for a bit longer.
We did get this little nugget of treasure from the fan fiction, though.
Nugget of treasure.
Please stop it, Master. Yeah, it is true. Rawr.
Yeah. Thanks, Ed. If you want to ask us questions, we tend to read them out on the show and answer them on the show, which otherwise we'd just be reading them out, which is not great. Go give us a review on whatever platform you can. 5 stars helps us in the algorithm in some way, apparently, but you can just write gibberish. You could put us a 5-star review and write a recipe for your favorite type of cake. That would work.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or about the superior properties of using a face mask as a set of bugger smugglers. And how they are surprisingly luxurious in their craftsmanship when applied to your gentleman's area. Or your lady area, alternatively. Or just your area. Any area. What?
You put a 5-star review and write the Konami code, but put it in wrong. I wonder, just to really mess people up.
Ooh, break the internet, surely.
You cat. You can.
Ain't I a stinker?
Right, I think we should probably... So thank you for listening to this here show. We will be back in some shape or form next week. I hope you will join us. But until then, all that's left for me to do is to remind you that I have been Dan.
I might have been Tim. And I also might have been modelled really well by Coleman this week in WWE.
I forgot about that.
That was good.
Nice.
Yeah. I have been Chevy Chase.
Great. Ooh.
Back from
you.
The grave.
Wow. That's your lot. Thank you for downloading us. And until next time, dear listeners, toodle bye. You might have to hang behind me. You might have to hang behind red eyes on the highway.
your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.